Gang, for over a year now, I've been talking about True Hemp Science Full Spectrum CBD oils and how they've reduced my anxiety and helped me get better sleep without waking up feeling foggy and confused. I've also talked about the Full Spectrum CBD balms that relieved my hand pain last year and made playing piano and guitar much easier. Well, gang, today I'm going to tell you about True Hemp Science organic gummies made with Full Spectrum hemp oil that are available now. They come in two different gauges. There are 50 milligram ones that have 50 milligrams of CBD and 1.5 milligrams of THC. Then there are ones that are 100 milligrams of CBD and 5 milligrams of THC. Absolutely delicious lemon lime slash orange flavors and also watermelon black cherry flavors. Super, super delicious. Now, they also have a complete line of full spectrum CBD products, including oils, tinctures, skincare lotions, sports rubs, chocolates, gummies, all kinds of stuff. Well, gang, How Did I Get Here has teamed up with True Hemp Science to bring you a very special offer that benefits all of us. Spend $100 or more at truehempscience.com and you will get a free gift. Just enter the code HDIGH at checkout. There's a little code place there for you to enter it, HDIGH, and you will get a free gift with purchase. That's right. Go to truehempscience.com and balance your body and mind with True Hemp Science. Let's get down. Hey, gang, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of How Did I Get Here? I know you have a lot of choices out there, and the fact that you're listening to this episode right now is not lost on me, so thank you. I'm not sure what platform you're listening on, but whatever platform you're on, give us a follow. And if you like what you hear, leave us a rating. It takes just a second, and it means the world to me. Plus, it really helps the show. So thank you in advance. And remember, the last 100 episodes of How Did I Get Here are available on all streaming services. Now, enjoy the show. Johnny, I'm your host. Welcome to the show. I hope you guys have all had a good week, whatever it is you did this week. If you are in Austin, you are probably waist deep in South by Southwest at this point. You're in the quagmire of South by, baby. That's what I'm saying. I'm actually doing this intro on Wednesday, and I've already been to quite a few things. I had podcasts on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and then I figured since I finished this podcast today, I would go ahead and do my intro and put the show together for Friday so that I can spend Wednesday evening going out and enjoying South by Southwest. Also, Thursday day and Thursday night, I'm going to go out and enjoy it as well. I'm leaving town on Friday. Real quick, gang. I'm leaving town on Friday, going to spend a couple of days with family, but also Skyrocket is playing in Houston on Saturday, March 16th. That's tomorrow if you're listening to this the day that it comes out. Saturday, March 16th, Skyrocket plays at Last Concert Cafe. Come on out. It's going to be a great show. We love playing Last Concert Cafe. Houston's a great place for us. The crowd in Houston's great. If you don't know what Skyrocket is and you live in Houston, you're like, what is this? I want to go see this. Well, you can go to skyrockettheband.com. There's videos and stuff there. You can see what it is that we do. And if you want to get tickets, go to lastconcert.com for tickets for our show tomorrow night, Saturday, March 16th in Houston at Last Concert Cafe. All right, gang. So as I said, I've gotten out a little bit during South By. I had quite a few podcasts, some really interesting podcasts. I got to talk to this amazing French rapper, Tracy Desa from France. Amazing, amazing conversation. Get out there and check her out. It's Tracy Desa, S-A. All right. Also, as I said, I did this collaboration podcast with Magnet Classics Podcast, my friend Hobart Roland, who hosts that podcast. He and I now get together during South by Southwest and do a collaboration podcast with somebody. And today we did Fastball, talking about their new album that's coming out this summer in June, hopefully, called Desert Songs. Fucking great album, man. I've actually been listening to it for, you know, the last 9 months because I played with them last summer and we were playing a lot of the songs from this record. But anyway, that's been my South by Southwest, just doing a bunch of podcasts. I talked to this really cool, very cool band, actually, that's from Austin called Open 2.0. And they are like a prog fusion, dreamy, instrumental band. It's a really interesting band, man. Very interesting. Anyway, so I did get out, though, during South by Southwest. I got out and saw some bands on Sunday. I got out on Tuesday, went to a party that had some music and people and stuff, and that was fun. I didn't see anything that really blew my mind, but I did notice that South by Southwest is a little less congested this year, and I don't know if that comes from there's people that are boycotting it. I don't know if you guys know this, but like 60 bands have pulled out so far of South by Southwest. They're not playing it because the Army, the U.S. Army, is a sponsor of South by Southwest. And then that's triggered this whole thing where the governor wrote this thing that like, oh, don't come here if you don't like the Army. We like the Army or whatever. And then, of course, South by Southwest retaliates with, hey, we accept all people. We accept your views. I accept those views, man. The one thing that I think is weird, though, is that I think that the Army's been, I feel like the Army's been a sponsor for years now of South by. I don't know if it's because of the war. I really don't know exactly the reason why people are boycotting it. I just saw that people were boycotting it. Then I saw this thing that like 60 bands were boycotting it. Then I saw this tweet from the governor and then the response from South by Southwest. And so it's out there, it's heating up. But you know, if you're out there in it, let us know how it was. Let us know if you saw some stuff. I know there's a lot of great local stuff going on. The SoCo Stomp is a big thing that goes on where there's lots of bands, like everyone from like Chuck Prophet to like Ian Moore, all kinds of people from here, from all over the place, kind of Continental Club family of bands playing for days out of that thing. And that's a lot of fun. That's a no badges, no wristband thing. So yeah. So anyway, I hope that you guys all had a great South by Southwest. I hope I have a great South by Southwest. I mean, now I'm actually going to go out and get into it, man. I don't have any more responsibilities. Johnny on the loose, baby. I'll let you guys know how it goes on Tuesday's show. Gang, I have a great show for you guys today. I do, man. This is a great show. I've been wanting to get this guy on the show for a long time. Singer-songwriter Danny Kirinos, who plays under the name Amigo the Devil, is my guest on the show today. I'm so excited to you guys to hear this conversation. Absolutely fantastic. He's been living in Nashville, but he lived in Austin a few years ago. And we have a little bit of a talk about that. But this new record, Yours Until the War Is Over, absolutely fantastic record. It's gorgeous. Gorgeous, man. There are some songs on there, The Mechanic, I'm Going to Heaven, and of course, Cannibal Within, which I'll play for you guys on here. Get out there and listen to this record even before you listen to this conversation, because this record's fucking great. Go to amigothedevil.com to find out how you can connect with it. Now, this record has been blowing up, all right? On Billboard this week, it's number 27 on the top current album sales. It's number 40 on top album sales. It's number 18 on Heat Seekers. He's got a real hit, a legitimate hit on his hands. And he's out on tour doing the Road to Rebellion tour with Flogging Molly. He's even playing this weekend, Shamrock Rebellion. It's a big show with a lot of different bands, Amigo the Devil, but it's like Flogging Molly, Frank Turner and his band, and a bunch of different bands. They're playing Saturday, March 16th in Silverado, California, Sunday, March 17th in Las Vegas. This big Shamrock Rebellion festival show is happening. He'll be heading to Australia in April. From April 13th to 28th, he'll be doing a tour there and playing festivals. And he'll be on tour with Frank Turner in May and June here in the States. And in June 14th, he'll be here in Austin at Emo's. Go to Amigo the Devil to get involved with this. Danny and I have a great conversation. He's an amazing, amazing songwriter. I mean, such a heavy, heavy, heavy songwriter. He's living in Nashville now. He lived in Austin before, but we have a talk about Nashville. We talk about living in Austin. He was born in Miami. I was born in Miami. We talk about the undercurrent of anger that resides in the city of Miami. And we talk about just, I cannot begin to tell you how great these songs are. Once Upon a Time at Texaco, Part 1. What an amazing song. I'm telling you, man, this guy is an amazing fucking songwriter. Super cool dude. We have a great conversation. He's out on tour right now, as I told you guys, on the Road to Rebellion tour. Go to amigothedevil.com to get involved and find out if you can see him. And without further ado, please enjoy my conversation with Amigo the Devil. Let's get down.
I never thought I was scared of dying at all. I always thought my biggest fear would somehow be love-related, not fentanyl. I can blame the addiction for that, with the additional countdown to a heart attack when the beating comes from the irregular drum.
The hard trying to run around finding good service.
Dude, I totally understand, and I really appreciate you doing this in the middle of a tour.
Well, I really appreciate you having us.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to it.
Well, I've been a fan for a long time. I guess it's 2019 or something. One of my friends told me about you, and I was trying to get you on the show back then. I couldn't, and I was so stoked when I got the email from your publicist. And this record is so great, man.
Well, thank you so much.
Yeah, man, you really like this is. It's just amazing. I have three favorite songs of mine are I'm Going to Heaven, The Mechanic, A Stray Dog, and also the Texaco song as well. Once Upon a Time at Texaco Part 1.
I'm Going to Heaven was such a fun song to write, and definitely, in my opinion, probably the most unique writing process of the record. I mean, nothing mind-blowing, but definitely a world of its own, I would say, while trying to make that song.
Yeah. Yeah, tell me, how's this tour going so far with Flogging Molly?
It's unreal. They're so kind.
Yeah?
They just as cool themselves. They're amazing. But I was talking to the Dennis the guitar player last night about, as a support tour, the biggest difference is that their fans, the people that are coming out, you know, because being an opening band, very often you get overlooked because people just come for who they come for and that's it. They have this chip on their shoulder, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Their fans are so kind and very, very much geared towards music. Like, you can tell that they're just fans of music.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's nice.
Yeah, man. I it's interesting that you say that because I've been going through what you'll be doing and what you've been doing for the last year or so, and you were on like this super like metal festival too. It's interesting how you can cross genres.
I think that's a little bit of the the mania of the project. Maybe just the cross-reference of my influences in general.
Yeah.
We've been very fortunate to have essentially people from all walks of life giving us opportunities and giving us the time of day. And I think, in my opinion, that's just because the songs are based on storytelling, not a sound.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Yeah.
I guess there's also an aggression to your approach that almost like somebody that comes from punk rock, someone like you'll be doing shows with, like Frank Turner, who I've seen and yeah. talked to about this very thing that like sort of this, how punk and folk, cross a lot.
It also is really funny that, cause I grew up more on the metal side than the punk side. Not that I didn't have friends in both, but it's funny how many people from both worlds, metal and punk, ended up picking up acoustic instruments and starting, you know, acoustic projects.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Because the intensity and the integrity is there, and you're telling a story of truth. You know what I mean? There's a truth you're telling?
Yeah. Three chords of the truth.
Yeah. Well, in some of those metal bands, there's way more than three chords. But
oh yeah.
Hey, so let me ask you this, Danny. You were born in Miami and you grew up there?
Yes.
Well, I was born there and I lived there a couple of times, but I grew up going there. My parents were divorced, but what part of Miami are you from?
I was in Kendall.
Oh yeah, nice. I was actually just there like a week ago.
That's so funny. It's such a different city now. It's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Especially the Brickell area.
Yeah.
I remember growing up, we had an apartment in, it was mostly Kendall, and then we kind of moved to Brickell, the Brickell area, and it was just as you know, back then it was just the extension of the financial district.
Right.
And now they've really made that into just a hub. It's a hot spot for it's so crazy. I don't recognize it at all.
Do you get back there much?
I used to, not so much anymore. Once my mom moved to Texas, I kind of didn't really have a reason other than a little bit of debauchery and
right
the beach. But personally, this may be blasphemy, but I prefer the Gulf beaches anyway.
Oh yeah, me too. Did you live in Austin for a while? That's where I am now.
Yeah, I was there for about 8 years. Spicewood and Lakeway.
Were you like making music here and playing out and stuff?
Yeah, I'd say the majority of my time with this project has been spent in Austin. I moved about a half ago from Austin to Tennessee.
Okay.
And that story, there's no reason for that either. It was just frustration. I was just trying to find a house. There was a property that I wanted to buy in Austin. And as you know,
yeah,
real estate in Austin became insane.
Yeah, it is too crazy.
So over the course of a year, I got so frustrated with trying to buy a house in Austin that I was on a trip in Tennessee. My friend, you know, showed me a couple of properties, and I was like, we're leaving. I miss it a lot. I miss Austin a lot.
Yeah. Well, I see you're going to be back here in June with Frank Turner at Emo's.
Yep. Emo's? Yeah. I love Emo's.
Yeah, dude, that's a great place. It's a different Emo's than I grew up with, but Emo's nonetheless.
So awesome.
Yeah.
There's a youthful spirit about Austin that you don't really find anywhere else.
No, it really is. It's a place that allows people like me to be in their 50s and pretend they're still 23.
But that's the beauty of it. Like, it really does seem like there's no age barrier whatsoever. There's just no consideration of age. It's just, are you alive or not?
Right.
I love it so much. And where I am now is the complete opposite. It takes itself very seriously, and I don't associate with it. I don't identify with it.
Oh. And where is it, Nashville that you're in?
It's outside of Nashville.
Outside.
But I mean, basically Nashville, yeah.
Yeah. That's a different kind of place.
I'm not saying it's a great city for someone. It's just not. I haven't found my home there yet.
Right.
Yeah.
I get that, man. I'm sorry to hear that. Come back to Austin.
Maybe I'll stop in Austin soon.
Hey, a couple of things before we get to how you got into music is congratulations, man. You yesterday you posted you have the number 27 top current album sales, number 40 album sales, and number 18 Heat Seekers in Billboard.
Yeah.
Dude, that's amazing.
That was a shock to me. I don't, you know, they let me know. What are you talking about? I do tend to, in my mind, try to ignore that kind of stuff. I've never been very passionate about those accolades.
Sure.
Until they happen. And then okay, that's.
Right. I've always said that I've never really cared about the Grammy Awards. I've never really watched them. I always feel disconnected from the people that are televised as opposed to the music that I connect with normally. And until the day that I would be up for one, then I would totally be like the biggest fan of the Grammys of all time.
Yeah. 100%.
So, all right. So, How old were you when, like, how did music come to you? Because obviously, like, you have a deep connection to music and the kind of music that if you are born and raised in Miami, you don't hear on the radio.
So, it's a, I think my initial bout with music, because I've always been obsessed with music and sounds and the sonic nature of anything, like, if you flick a, you know, glassware, the sound it makes is exciting to me.
Right.
I don't know what that says about me, but something. And since I was a kid, I've always really enjoyed exploring those tendencies, essentially. But when I was about 13, 12, 11, 12, I had met some new friends in a new school. I got expelled from school and got transferred to a different school at the end of the year. No one would take me because it was so close to the end of the year. And finally, they found a school to put me in. And I met a group of friends that, I say friends, but they absolutely hated me. They were just making fun of me the whole time. And
I'm sorry.
I wanted to be friends with them. So they had a band. And I basically lied about being able to play guitar. My cousin had given me a guitar, so I knew I had one. I just didn't know how to play it. And they were like, oh, you play guitar? Like, that's really cool. You know, you should come jam with us. And, you know, mind you, we're kids, literal kids. So my mom dropped me off. And they quickly realized I have no idea what I'm doing. But it was such a cool experience to sit in the room and watch them play, even though I wish that I could see what they were playing at this point. Like, right. I wish I could go back and hear how bad it really was.
Right, right, right.
But to me, it was such a rewarding experience that I went home and I pretty much taught myself guitar and the songs that they were playing in like a week. And ever since then, I've been diving into the music world in terms of playing it. Now, as far as the influences, when I started this project, I didn't have any of the influences that I have now other than, I'd say, Tom Waits. I found Tom Waits early on through a BMX magazine.
Through a BMX magazine?
And, yep. And it was they had a little album review section. And I'd say three or four of my biggest influential records came from that BMX magazine.
Wow, what were
Godspeed You Black, Lift Your Skinny Fists. So yeah, so Godspeed was that one. Tom Waits, Murder Ballads, Nick Cave, and Fiona Apple. Those were all reviewed in the BMX magazine.
And you went out and bought them.
I used to go to this place. Well, do you remember Uncle Sam's on the beach?
No. But that's where I went to Beach High when I lived there. But I left, like, I saw you were born in 1987. That's when I left there.
Okay. So there was this little record store on the beach called Uncle Sam's. And it was the only place back then for me that I knew of that had all the weird shit. And one of the people that worked there kind of took me under their wing when they heard me bring up the bands that I was bringing up. And so they would order a lot of the weird stuff for when I came in, and they would like let me listen to it in the store, and they would give me other recommendations. But early on, you know, I was also doing a lot of the like cassette and record trading through the back of magazines and stuff like that.
Yeah, they were still doing that in like the late 90s?
Yeah. When at least with like black metal and stuff like that.
Oh, so you were deep. You were deep into it, man. You were in the black metal.
That was, yeah, I loved it. It was like grind and black metal was kind of my biggest passion in terms of metal. And I just remember like getting into the old zines and doing all the demo trading and all that crap. And I miss that. I miss that so much because you, I never knew what I was getting, you know, if I was getting anything.
Yeah.
And I remember the Tom Waits, it was Mule Variations was the first Tom Waits record I got, because that's the one that was reviewed.
That's one of my favorite ones, I think, of his.
It is.
That and Rain Dogs. Good. Yeah.
Oh, Rain Dogs, Real Gone, and Mule Variations, I think, are my three favorites. Although, I get in moods, I'm like a Blood Money mood. I get in just different Waits moods all the time.
Yeah, man.
Well, funny because people question on this record. They're like, oh, I hear Tom Waits' influence. I'm like, you think? Like, what are we talking about here?
Yeah.
This is as close to a blatant ripoff as you can get.
Well, I mean, it's hard to, like, there's sort of that sort of like, kind of what you think Bukowski would sing like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like if he wrote songs and had gigs, like that's what they would be like. You know what I mean? It's great. I mean, it's you're just also like, there's such a great, like walking with earbuds in, listening to this record, and other ones as well, just being sort of like taken to these places. Like do you ever write longer form? Like, do you ever write like short stories or anything like that?
I used to a lot more.
You did?
I would love to get back into, I want to write an actual book. I would love to write a novel. My attention span isn't what it used to be though.
Right. I would read it, man. Your writing is just so, it's beautiful. Like, it's beautiful. It really is. Like, it's so poetic and just your, there's even like, there was a vibe that I got on that Once Upon a Time at Texaco that, there's almost can be like a Shel Silverstein, and not cover the Rolling Stone, like not songwriter Shel Silverstein, but like Where the Sidewalk Ends Shel Silverstein. You know what I mean?
Funny enough, that is one of my biggest writing influences on the planet.
Fuck yeah, I hit it. Good, mine
yeah,
too.
So you did that. You fucking nailed it.
Sorry.
I love it. No, I love it. That makes me so happy. No one has ever brought it up. And it
really?
Makes me so happy.
It's funny, the first time I heard that song, I started it over because I was like, this is fucking totally sounds like something out of like Where the Sidewalk Ends or Light in the Attic or something.
That makes me so happy.
Oh, good, man.
Yeah. I think the one of the funny things with the music stuff, with the beginnings of this project is for the first few years, since I didn't have access to the type of music that I was trying to write, like I didn't know it existed. You know, I didn't know anything about folk or country or Western or any of the influences outside of the limited batch that I had. I was at a bar after I had written, I think it was after the first EP. So I had about 5 songs written. And people kept mentioning different, oh, you know, are you influenced by this? Or I was like, I don't know who any of these people are. I'm at a bar and somebody covered John Prine, Sam Stone.
Yeah.
I had never heard that song before. I'd never really heard that style of playing at the time because I was so isolated into my little noise and black metal world in Miami. And I was like, what the hell was that? That's the most beautiful song I've ever heard in my life. And when the guy got off stage, I asked him, and he's like, oh, it's this guy John Prine. And I remember at this point, I was already, you know, just master, whatever you can do. So I went and I dove into that catalog. And I think that was the genuine moment that I spiraled into my deep dive of story-based music associated to, I don't want to use the word Americana because it isn't.
No, but I know what you mean. It's like a Southern Gothic kind of, right?
Yeah. And that's where my love for all the different genres of country and traditionals and roots and all that, that's where that started. And that's a very late start. You know, because most people grow up with it. They have it around their house. I definitely didn't.
Right.
Well, my parents didn't really speak English well, so it was like, they weren't any of that.
Can I ask you a weird question I wanted to ask you, but I didn't want to interrupt you. When you got expelled from school, what was the school that you went to?
Well, I was, funny enough, I was swimming for Ransom Everglades.
Oh, yeah, my cousin JP went there.
Yeah. I was swimming for them, and I was getting bullied a lot because I didn't really belong there. And so I did some bad things to retaliate, and yeah, it was bad. But also, we were kids; it didn't matter.
Sure.
I was peeing the kids back a little bit.
I have an uncle that's like 4 years older than me, and he had gone through a similar thing. And he had to go to this school called Kendall Acres.
Kendall Acres?
That sounds really small. Like literally like 150 people in the whole school.
Damn. I ended up, I don't remember Kendall Acres. But I also don't remember a lot of things.
Yeah. Go ahead.
To SAS. I ended up going to SAS, the community college high school.
Okay.
It was like I was doing the college stuff and high school at the same time.
Did you end up going to college?
I did a couple trade school type things, left all of them. Except for brewing. And also I went to culinary school.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was mostly to pass the time until I was old enough to go to brewing school. And then, I got my degree in brewing between Chicago and Munich.
Wow, that's awesome.
And I was in that industry for a little while. It is definitely, that was the break between playing music. So all the bands that I was in when I was young, all the this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life bands.
Right.
Once those failed, I wanted to make my, I guess, grandfather proud. So I was like, I'll get a real job. And I worked in the brewing industry for a couple of years and didn't play music at all through that time. And then eventually when I was getting fed up with that industry is when I started writing songs for this project.
When you came back to writing songs, was it a lot different? Was your songwriting style a whole lot different than when you left it to go into the brewing industry?
Incredibly different. I had definitely never, ever, ever written anything like I was writing for this. And it set me on such a different path emotionally and mentally. And I think it definitely allowed me to open up as a person as well. I would say I was definitely a very different person before learning how to let go of the control of the emotions themselves.
Yeah.
And I think a lot comes from just that environment, especially, you know, a place like Miami where you kind of are taught to close off and then keep your emotions either somewhat hidden or completely out there. Because you know how Miami is. People just losing their mind all the time.
Dude, my parents were both born in Cuba. I know exactly what you mean.
Oh, exactly. It's not like, hey, here's how I feel. It's just nothing or...
It's so funny that you say that. I went there a couple weeks ago, and I went there like in between gigs. I had a gig here on Friday, and I had another one on Monday. And then I went there Saturday morning. I got very little sleep while I was there, just like, you know, hanging out with family and stuff like that. I came back and played a gig, and that energy was in me. I got mad at one of our band members at the end of the show because I thought that he did something stupid. But the level of anger that I expressed was so ridiculous. And I feel like I went there, and just being there for 44 hours was enough to get me in its grips. You know what I mean?
So funny how quickly you fall back into it. I definitely do. Every time I go back, I'm just like, nope, I'm back, baby.
You're screaming at people on the expressways and shit.
I'm just irrationally angry all the time now.
Well, man, let me ask you this. When you first started playing and you went in and played with your friends that you're not sure if they were your friends or not, when you connected with music that day and you wanted to do it for the, like, you were like, oh, this is what I want to do. What was it, the sort of the freedom and sort of the, in my case at that age, it provided an identity to me that I thought I didn't have. And all of a sudden I belonged somewhere.
I think that's a really, really good way to put it. I would also say that there is a level of just the counterculture mentality where back then it really did feel like a little bit of a rebellion. It felt a little out of pocket and kind of, it's so silly to say, but at that age, you know, it was exciting. It felt dangerous to me.
Yeah.
And I remember seeing guys talking, and I was like, damn, this is like cool. This is the first cool thing that I get to be a part of that isn't just like a toy I like or something.
Right. Yeah.
That identity that you mentioned is very much, very much a part of it, because it was something to tell people and it was exciting.
Yeah. And girls treat you differently, if that's your bag.
It's just, isn't it funny how much the purpose of playing music evolves as you learn it?
Yeah.
It's mind-blowing, because I've had so many phases within even something as simple as writing a song for shock value versus genuinely trying to understand what the purpose of it is.
Yeah.
Because I've definitely done that when I was younger, you know, write songs for shock value. And now I think it sucks that I did, but live and learn.
Yeah. Well, also when you're younger, you're trying different suits on to figure out who you are, you know?
Yeah. How much do you think the geography has changed your musicianship, not in terms of playing or style, but the purpose?
I've only really lived in Texas and in Miami since I wanted to be a musician. But in what sense do you mean that? How much where my surroundings influence?
For example, I started writing these songs in San Francisco. I was living in San Francisco at the time. And the first few that I wrote were around friends and people that were much more socially conscious than other friends I'd had in the past.
I see what you mean.
And I think it kind of put me in a place to explore myself in terms I had never really considered before when writing the songs, because of how different the social climate. I'm not saying pandering to at all, but it did allow me to kind of realize maybe this form of thinking isn't healthy after all. Maybe this, again, going back to the shock value thing, maybe the shock value thing isn't really that fun anymore without a purpose.
Right. Well, there's...
And what's...
There's also a time where it's effectiveness wears off with age, you know? It's weird being like some guy that's like 35 all pissed off at the world. It's just kind of sad. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah, very much so.
Like Axl Rose in his early 20s works, but Axl Rose in his 50s is just, oh man, sorry, bro. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, honesty without tact is just cruelty.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me ask you this, as far as those kind of surroundings, I know that it was... Did you find yourself in sort of the era of the pandemic when people were locked down, as a songwriter, did you go further inward of self-exploration, or did you sort of let the outside, all of the energy that was happening outside, seep into what you were writing at the time?
I had a very selfish pandemic. I know a lot of people were suffering and struggling, and it does feel weird to say this with that knowledge, but lockdown to me was amazing.
Yeah.
It was such a relief. It was a break. I hadn't had a break in forever. I think most people hadn't.
Right.
Everyone was just grinding and moving. And
yeah.
And I just was so fortunate to live where we did live in Lakeway, that we were right by so many bodies of water. My days consisted of waking up, drinking coffee, right, put on a record, grab my kayak, and I would literally float the river, smoke cigars and read, and write all day. That's it.
Sounds awesome.
And on the writing side, I can't say that any of it was influenced by external forces of the attitude around COVID and the lockdown. Right. It wasn't written from a point of frustration. It was just writing. Very regular. Here I am writing, you know?
Yeah.
And it was such a relief to just not have the pressure of figuring anything out, that I would say it was probably the most, in my opinion, mutually internal and external, because I had the time to look inward and truly analyze what I was feeling in those moments without any pressures, without any distractions. But at the same time, I had the space around me and the time around me to actually understand how those sentiments fit in the world around me. Yeah. And to explore what they genuinely mean and why they're there. So it was a complete process to me. Very complete.
That's great. It's like a positive story.
Yeah, it was amazing. And then as soon as I found out that we had a tour booked again, I had nightmares forever. Worst nightmares, worst anxiety.
Yeah, it's funny how people came back kind of like they were, it's like 50% among my fellow musician friends, people that wanted to double down and play more than they ever did, and then other people that were like, you know, I've been working really hard for a long time, and I found out over the last year I really don't have to kill myself to do this.
Yeah. You know? Oh, yeah. It's a beautiful, beautiful realization. I was kind of that mindset, you know, in my head. Before the pandemic, I was like, I don't care, 15 in a row. Like, we're not, none of this, no breaks. Do the longest drives I can. And the second that I felt any sense of whether it's laziness, whether it's lack of responsibility, we came back to touring, and I was like, I'm not doing this shit anymore. We're not doing, I'm doing three in a row max. I don't care.
Right.
I really started treating it more of let's focus on longevity rather than, you know, that illusion of the grind.
Yeah.
Because the illusion of just, oh, we're so hardworking, blah, blah, blah. All you're doing is killing yourself.
Yeah.
All you're doing, it's just, I don't know, so different.
It is a lot different. Hey, let me ask you a question. Do you know Mary Gaucher?
I do. I mean, not personally, honestly, but
she lives in your town. That would be a good person for you to be friends with.
Yeah, I'm so oddly reclusive when I'm home.
I get that, man.
But I have met a couple of really awesome people, and I would I'd love to actually know her.
Well, it seems like you guys are kind of cut from the same cloth, like as songwriters. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I'm a fan.
Do you like when you're writing these songs and writing the lyrics? How? I know this is a weird question, but she said that she spends like 40 hours writing lyrics on each song.
So, Garden of Leaving on the new record took me personally it took a very long, it took weeks, you know. I don't know overall the hours, but it took me weeks to write that song on my own. And then when David Talley, he plays guitar with me, and he was kind of like my collaborator on the songwriting. This right, first time I've ever had anybody to write with. When he came into it, we spent on our own, I'd say about as much time, because I didn't want those lyrics to be misrepresented in any way, shape, or form at all. So we kept exploring. But then the first song on the record, Hanging by the Roots.
Yeah.
I wrote that song like maybe 10 minutes. It was probably 10, 15 minutes. I had the main idea, and then I just kind of, it felt like I was just given the lyrics. I didn't think at all.
Right.
It varies. It varies. And I'm going to heaven, for example. Tally and I talked about the story of that song for so long. We would sit there for hours and hours at a time and talk about the story. We're like, all right, well, what if this happens? What if that happens? You know, originally there was going to be this giant massacre in heaven. it didn't have the ending it did now. And it felt, we kept asking ourselves throughout the whole record, like, what's the purpose of this? What's the actual purpose of this guitar line? What's the purpose of this lyric? What's the purpose of the story? And every version of heaven that we came up with just felt like it was cheating the song until we came up with this version. And then once, you know, we spent a couple of weeks talking about these stories, and then once we kind of had a rough guide of the mood of the story and all that, I just sat there overnight and just banged out the lyrics because it came naturally. And I do like writing instinctually.
Right.
So I feel like my thing isn't that I spend a ton of time on the lyrics. I think I spend a ton of time on the setup and the purpose of it. And then once that happens, the lyrics kind of just fall into place.
That's interesting, man.
It's the whole thing that everyone says, you know, you start serving the song and really hearing what the song is asking of you, rather than you telling the song what it is.
Yeah.
I think it's important.
Yeah. It's like a studio mantra of mine.
Yeah.
Like, what does this song want us to do?
Absolutely.
What's it asking for? Stray Dog is a great song, dude. There's like a 70s glam rock swagger to that song.
It's fun. Yeah, it wasn't for me.
What's that?
That song wasn't for me initially.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's another fun pandemic one. Over quarantine, I dabbled in writing for other people.
Oh, wow.
Because I was writing so much that it was just fun to do. And I was helping somebody write a record, and that song came about. It's funny because it is still very personal. Even though I wrote it for someone else, it's very much a very personal song. So I'm glad they didn't take it, because I would feel really weird if they did. Like, if they had used it, I think I'd be mad at myself now.
Yeah. Well, it's a great song, and this recording of it is great. Did you guys record a lot of this? Like when the band is playing, was it like live playing together? Like, is that at least on the basic tracks?
No, most of the record is just me and Tally.
Oh, wow.
Playing everything.
It has a really great feel to it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, it has like a real band feel.
We would kind of do pretty much, Tally and I would do everything. And then on some of the songs, Carson would come in and do the drum part, like the snare rolls and all that, better, just because he can. Jason, the engineer, he played bass on most of the songs.
Huh.
But we had already laid down kind of guides for everything. So it was Tally and I just making the map.
Yeah.
And then letting people do what they could better. But also a lot of the percussion is just me and Tally banging on shit because it felt more raw. It felt better. And we would try cleaned up versions of it, and it just didn't feel as good.
Yeah.
I'm big on raw. I love anything that sounds feral.
Yeah.
Where it belongs. I will leave it in.
Well, that's the thing about those Tom Waits records we were talking about, is that they have that too.
Yeah.
Like raw, fucking weird sounds that are, you know, clanging metal.
I can't even imagine a Tom Waits record. Like, I can't imagine Swordfish Trombones recorded properly. Right. You know, studio.
Yeah, yeah. If it was like done like the Earth, Wind, and Fire or something.
I mean, it'd be a funny experiment, but so weird.
Dude, that's insane. Polished. Well, man, this record is great. If people can hear it, yours, Until the War is Over. Danny, it's been really great talking to you, man. You are a fucking great artist. I'm sorry we never ran into each other when you were here, but maybe we will sometime. I love your stuff so much, man. I love your music so much. I'm really honored that you were able to do the show.
I'm really grateful you took the time, and I do hope we run into each other. I enjoyed chatting. I enjoyed chatting a lot.
Yeah, likewise.
I feel like we're just getting...
Yeah, I know. We could do this for another 4 hours. Well, hopefully we'll get to do it again, man. It's been really great meeting you and talking to you.
Likewise. Right, I hope we do it again.
All right, my man.
Take care.
Bye, bro. Addiction for that. With the additional countdown to a heart attack when the beating comes. Gang, that was Amigo the Devil. Yours Until the War is Over is available now. The song you're hearing there is called Cannibal Within. Fantastic song. Great record. I cannot tell you enough how great this record is. Get out there and see him play. He's playing all over the place. He'll be in Austin on June 14th at Emo's with Frank Turner. And if you live in California, Southern California, or in Las Vegas, they'll be playing this weekend with the Shamrock Rebellion Festival, along with Flogging Molly, Frank Turner, and all kinds of people. All right. I want to thank Danny for doing the show. I had a great time talking to him. He's such a cool guy. Such a cool guy. And I felt like we really connected. Anyway, gang, hey, man, enjoy the rest of South by Southwest. Stay safe out there. And don't forget, we have new shows every Tuesday and every Friday. Subscribe to the show, and you'll be alerted to it. Go to Apple Podcast, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast. Leave us a rating. Let us know how we're doing. Makes us feel good. You can follow me. I'm Johnny Gowdy on Instagram, and you can follow the show at How Did I Get Here on Facebook. All right? Thank you so much for listening to the show. Have a great rest of the weekend, and come out and see Skyrocket if you're in Houston tomorrow night, Saturday, March 16th at Last Concert Cafe. Have a great weekend. Let's get down.
Inside our skin, we're losing the fight. Eaten alive by the cannibal within. In a major turn of events, it turns out I'm depressed. They say I use jokes and joy to avoid the realization that I can think of solutions for that. Just turn on the radio and cock it back. I just don't want to blow my brains out to Hotel California. And all the parts we hate start adding up, until we find ourselves with more regret than blood. And the moment we can't recognize the body we're living in, we're losing the fight. Eaten alive by the cannibal within. And that overwhelming feeling, oh, the pressure in my chest, swim against the sinking feeling that today might be my last. But everything looks beautiful.